What is up, Bitcoiners? Welcome to another episode of FedWatch, a timely episode of FedWatch. We got a lot of macro to get into. Obviously, craziness in the greater crypto sphere. We're going to talk about that a little bit, but I'm sure y'all have been hearing a lot about FTX and all of the craziness swirling around that. So we're also going to give you some fresh information, zoom out, talk about some things that are happening in greater macro. Before we get into it, man, I'm remiss. I don't have a copy right here in my hand of the Orange Party issue, our brand new Bitcoin magazine. I'm going to grab one after Ansel hops on here, but the Orange Party issue, guys, President Bukele on the front. You can get the latest Bitcoin magazine if you go to store.bitcoinmagazine.com, subscribe, use BM Live to save yourself 10% off, and go to Bitcoin 2023, Miami Beach, Florida, the Miami Beach Convention Center. It is going to be absolutely fantastic. There is nothing better than a bear market Bitcoin conference, and this is the biggest, baddest, most important one out there. So y'all, don't miss out on the Bitcoin conference, Bitcoin 2023, May 18th through the 20th. Ansel, welcome back, sir. Excited to get into it.
What's up, CK? Yeah, sorry about that. What did I miss?
I mean, not much, just giving a brief intro to the show. I know we're not really going to talk about FTX that much, but I feel like we need to start off with it because, wow, what an absolute explosion in the Bitcoin and crypto space.
Yeah, and it just keeps going and going. So FTX, then BlockFi, now this stuff with Gemini Earn or whatever, Genesis Earn, whoever is in trouble now. It just seems to keep going and going. But there's a bright side to this, and that is that the Bitcoin price is still holding up. I'm very impressed with how the Bitcoin price has actually performed when the largest Ponzi scheme the world has ever seen up to this point. I mean, not including Ethereum, but let's just talk about FTX here. That the largest Ponzi scheme up to this point that has exploded has just exploded in in this ecosystem that Bitcoin headlines. But Bitcoin is only down 4% from its June lows. I mean, it's down 20% in the week, but it's only down 4% lower than it was in June. And I think that's extremely strong performance by Bitcoin. I don't know. What else do you want to talk about FTX?
Well, I mean, I guess my question for you is, like, what do you make of it all? Obviously, there's a lot of contagion. I don't think people realized the type of leverage on paper, effectively worthless shitcoins that Alameda Research, FTX were using, and how many consumers and institutions, were invested in or had assets on FTX. So, obviously, I think that's one bombshell. The other bombshell, I think, is the attempts to paper it all over and the attempts to bring more customer funds into the fold. We're talking about acquiring Voyager, acquiring BlockFi as part of the BlockFi's deal, pressuring them to put as many customer funds onto the FTX platform as possible. I mean, we're even talking about Sam Bankman-Fried selling equity just a month ago to his employees at 50% discounts. I mean, it's not just the fraud, but it's like the fraud on top of the fraud on top of the fraud. And then the political affiliations at the highest level, at the very highest level. I mean, really quite a bombshell. I mean, I'll stop talking. I'll hand the mic back to you, Ansel.
Yeah, I don't know really what to say about it because it is just so crazy. I mean, FTX wasn't on my radar a year ago that something like this could happen. I mean, it's a very new exchange and it really kind of skyrocketed in popularity. They offered a lot of different types of, ways trading products. So you could actually do, I think, stocks on there, and there was betting markets, and it wasn't just like Bitcoin and Ethereum trading. It was all sorts of stuff on there. And I thought that they were doing pretty well. And then, yeah, like you say, I read this great thread. And let me get the guy's name. I'll put it in the show notes in the write-up to this episode. But it's from Mr. Jason Choi. And he goes through a detailed account of the launching of FTX and how it was all from the very beginning. Alameda and FTX were pretty much one entity. And FTX was there to finance and pump up the Ponzi schemes that Alameda was getting involved in. So right from the beginning, it looks like this was a big scam. It's not like they just had trouble in the last couple months and their scam, they had to get scammier and scammier to kind of try to save themselves. No, from the very beginning, this was scammy. And I will add this about SBF's kind of persona. It has a similar, I think, appeal that another big crypto founder has, where they're a little bit different. They're a little bit weird. They seem to be really genius, right? And I think a lot of these kind of affinity type scams where it's all about the founder and his genius, those things are going to blow up in good time, just like the FTX thing. So am I making any sense here, CK?
Absolutely, you're making sense. I apologize about the pause. Chris, I'm sending you a tweet from Charles Payne where he's showing kind of like the organizational structure of FTX. I think that this was originally shared to him by our very own Dylan McClaire before he went on to Fox Business earlier this week. But if you could put that, maybe the tweet or just the chart of the entity chart within FTX on the screen, I think that would help. Yeah, I mean, if it's too grainy, that's fine. But yeah, just throw it up there really quickly. I think it'll do a decent job of just illustrating like this is what a scam from the very beginning looks like. Look at this shell. This is like shell company on shell company on shell company. Like this, like there's apparently 300 people working for FTX, right? Why there's I'm looking at like 70 entities right here. You know, you almost have a company per person. It's absolutely insane. So,
and each in different jurisdictions, you know, they're their own subsidiaries in all these different jurisdictions.
So, I mean, the scheme was quite elaborate and they were building on it from the beginning. Maybe it got away from them. Maybe they lost big on too many altcoin bets. Maybe they themselves were exposed to Luna and some of these other things that brought down a lot of other players. But, you know, all of that is on top of the scheme that they were playing the whole time. Yeah. And I think it's the premeditated nature that was really the most unsavory, you know, things along the lines of FTX, you know, the head of Alameda Research seeing proprietary information about internal trading on FTX. Alameda Research having a faster API than all other market participants on FTX. Sam Bankman-Fried having mechanisms to transfer funds from FTX to Alameda Research that would not or did not activate their security notifications. So trading with customer funds on FTX and the fact that, you know, maybe if this information hadn't gotten leaked onto CoinDesk and CZ making his public move to tank the FTT token, he may have gotten away with it. And the man was working closely with the SEC, with the CFTC, with the highest levels of Congress to attempt to pass some pretty broad sweeping crypto regulations.
Yeah, that's the part that's really deep and interesting is what's the connection between the SEC and FTX. But I think it goes back to, you were talking about the FTT token. And I mean, that was a lot of their reserves, right? I think Alameda had like $8 billion worth of FTT tokens. And as soon as you start like dumping those on the open market, which CZ was doing, that is going to cause a cascade. Now, how much of this last kind of DeFi market was actually just money laundering scam? I mean, DeFi and NFTs and all this, that was pumped up and built by these guys. So how much of that do you think was legitimate speculation? I'll say legitimate speculation versus total scammy behavior. What would you say, CK?
Oh man, well, 20% of the speculators are creating 80% of the actual price action. And yeah, I mean, you could see that FTX, Alameda, their venture investments, the way that they operated, it was all one part of this big scam. And now we're starting to see the connections between US lawmakers, Ukraine, and other just suspect elements. So I don't want to go as far as, I just don't know enough to say you know, how much was money laundering, how much was a scam versus legitimate. But you can definitely tell they had their tentacles deep. They were playing, they were not playing like by the rules, and they were defrauding and misconstruing and misrepresenting a lot of what they were doing. And before we move on to off of FTX, but what I find to be the most shocking, or maybe the least shocking, the lack of vitriol and the lack of anger from the mainstream media, which pumped this guy up. Now it's almost like they're apologizing for him. The New York Times, Reuters, Fortune, all of these organizations have come out in the wake of this with softball puff pieces. And it's just like, man, like his money must have been so deep. Like how these are the same media institutions that will blindly smash Bitcoin on any sort of like negative news. They've gone after many of his industry competitors, Kraken, Binance, etc., even Coinbase, but yet they find room to give him empathy and the benefit of the doubt, despite being potentially the biggest scammer in financial history.
Yeah, I mean, maybe it's to keep him quiet. You know, maybe he has dirt on all these people and he's being sued, class action lawsuit now. There's, of course, all this stuff now with the government going to maybe go after FTX and all that stuff. So maybe they want to treat him well and say, hey, we will make sure you get a nice, easy trial if you don't spill the beans about who you were exactly laundering money for. And I think that's a possibility. Also, like, I'll add another one to this list of Tether. They FUD Tether constantly. And Tether once again comes out of this whole situation as like one of the cleanest shirts in this kind of craziness. So anyway, that's all I know about FTX. I think that the link that I will share to the tweet thread will be very eye-opening for people. And other than that, I just want to make sure that we emphasize the positivity. I mean, like I started with this, is Bitcoin is barely down from below its June lows, despite this huge explosion in the market, and we liquidate the bad investments, right? There is not going to be a bailout for FTX most likely, and that's good. We are in the good side of the economy that actually flushes out bad debt, so we can continue to build good, hopefully, on Bitcoin. Hopefully people will learn from their mistakes, these altcoiners, and I guess what would you call them, never anti-Bitcoin maxi people, and they'll learn some of their mistakes and perhaps concentrate on building on Liquid and building on Lightning and building on these other layer twos for Bitcoin. So
not Liquid. I think,
not Liquid. Okay. Well, it can be, there's a lot of opportunity for these people in Bitcoin.
Just use Bitcoin. I don't even like the term build on Bitcoin. I think it's literally an altcoin narrative, an altcoin framing. Yeah. Anyone can use Bitcoin. Bitcoin is permissionless to use, build into your system. So yeah, and yeah, I don't see Liquid being the thing, Chris. I'm sorry. I think it doesn't pass my open source sniff test. But I am bullish on Fediments. I think that makes more sense to me.
Yeah.
If we're gonna have a federation. We want to be an open federation.
There's lots of stuff like that. Yeah, that's very exciting. What about things like we've seen with the Lightning Network and stuff, how they're hooking up the Perth, was it football team or?
Yeah, the Perth Heat baseball team.
And now they can get like tips for good plays and stuff from the fans. What do you think about that? So one thing I see in the future is like, you know, a use case that uses Bitcoin, not like, hey, let's build it and they will come. So no, you have to have the use case first, then you build the thing onto Bitcoin. So what's your take on that kind of stuff?
Yeah, Bitcoin is permissionless to use, and it will be used all over the internet and in the world. So we use money. You can use money on different layers, right? So you actually use it as a medium of exchange, but you can also psychologically use it as a unit of account, and you can actually physically store value within it. So within those kind of three frames, like every use case for Bitcoin exists within that. So whether we have different platforms to make it easier to use, to make it more intuitive, to augment, add features, take away features, whatever. I think it's all possible. It just really depends on the frame and who adopts it and how. But I really don't like this idea of like building on Bitcoin. It's like you build you write software that runs on servers. Sometimes those servers are, you know, cloud servers, self-hosted servers, and then, you know, you leverage or use Bitcoin within that. So, you know, that's kind of my framing. So again, I think that there's some really clear ways that you can use Bitcoin. And ultimately, Bitcoin is for enemies. Bitcoin is for lack of trust. And when there is trust, you can layer that trust in and you know, maybe you don't necessarily need, you know, a bare digital asset transfer when a trust exists. But when there is no trust, when trust doesn't make sense, that's where Bitcoin is for. And you can use it. You can use it.
Absolutely. All right. Well, should we jump into today's topics?
Let's do it. Should we get into the charts, or should we hit on anything on CPI first?
Well, I just want to hit on CPI first. But so what we got going on today is G20. We're going to talk about the digital dollar pilot program, CPI, and I have some charts. We have been off for 2 weeks, or we haven't been chatting on FedWatch here since the 2nd of November. So a lot has happened on the charts. A lot has happened in macro. So we'll try to kind of summarize that a little bit today. One of the big things from last week was the CPI report. And the expert forecast, so this is from the Cleveland Fed's CPI Nowcast, was expecting 0.76% month on month, and CPI came in at 0.4%. So it was almost half as high as people were expecting. And of course, that set off fireworks in the stock market and kind of in Bitcoin on the first day, but then the FTX stuff rolled in heavy. So, and of that 0.4% on the CPI, half of that was from the shelter component, which I'll go into here in a second. And one reason why I wanted to concentrate on CPI and why I talk about CPI a lot on the show is because I think people are starting to realize that we've hit peak CPI and that Bitcoin needs to have some new narrative how to deal with this future that is going to be very low inflation and low growth. We're not going to see runaway hyperinflation, which Bitcoin's ready for that narrative, right? Bitcoin is sound money. It's ready to be a hedge against inflation. But I don't think Bitcoin's quite ready to hedge against a deflationary risk and a deglobalization risk. And I think we need to push that narrative forward because that's what the world, I think, is coming to.
Well, just to kind of add to that, I agree that like Bitcoin is here. Bitcoin is ready. Bitcoin works. And it's really about the Bitcoin community continuing to educate and continuing to discover how Bitcoin works and continuing to find ways to implement Bitcoin in the real world. I think a framing that I love and actually comes from you, Ansel, is, you know, Bitcoin is a better system. Bitcoin is a system where growth can happen. Bitcoin is a system where capital allocation can happen appropriately. And that, and it's a system where I love, this is from Nolan Bowerly of The Breakup, but where you can count your BTC. You can always count your BTC within the entire system. Counting is one of the key aspects of it. And right now we live in a system that's completely opaque. You can't count it. So I think that if you take into account like, hey, the world divided by 21 million, it's an ecosystem where you can actually make economic calculations. Then all of a sudden you see that in a world where growth is slowing, where stagflation is hitting in, nihilism is at all-time high, we're going to continue to see growth and prosperity within Bitcoin. You know, it's almost, I think it's really going to be similar to the same dynamic of open markets versus communist top-down markets during the Cold War. You know, there may have been a period of time at the beginning where, you know, people could make arguments for one system over the other. Fast forward 10 years, it was obvious to everyone which system provided more prosperity and growth. So I think that the same will be true. It might not be obvious at first, but over time, we're going to continue to see growth in Bitcoin, growth in the Bitcoin ecosystem, prosperity, energy abundance in the Bitcoin ecosystem, and then the opposite in the withering, dying traditional system.
Yeah, great framing, man. I totally agree. There is the green shoots in Bitcoin versus the old geriatric system that is dying. So love that. Now let's break down a little bit more here with the CPI. So the shelter component made up half of the CPI and it came in at 0.8%. And there is this weird thing about the shelter component. And I know a lot of people for a long time have been complaining. I mean, ShadowStats, if you're familiar with ShadowStats, that's a famous alternative CPI site where they use the 1980 way to measure CPI. And so that really, it counted real estate differently and rents differently. And I've been very critical of ShadowStats, but there was this kind of quirk in the shelter component, or there is a quirk in the shelter component that makes it naturally lag by 12 to 24 months. And the way that works is when they measure the change in rent, they measure it from the in renewed rents. So if you renew your rent, your lease, what was the change from the start of your lease to now the renewed lease? And that is obviously extremely lagging, right? Because you don't get a lease every month. You get a lease once a year or twice a year, or every 2 years you might sign a new lease. But they don't consider like the month-on-month change. So let's say the renewed leases went up 1%, and then the next month they went up 0.9%. They don't count that change. They just count this absolute year-over-year mark. So there's baked into this shelter component a year-over-year type of measurement. And one thing I've been really trying to hammer home in the last 6 months is you need to look at month over month, and the shelter really doesn't do that. So anyway, shelter is lagging by over a year, most likely. And that is what is making CPI even as high as it is, which at 0.4% is half of what the experts were expecting. So that's all I have to say about CPI. Do you have anything to add to that, CK?
Didn't add to it. Excited to get into the charts. Look at some Bitcoin strength despite the craziness. Let's get into it.
Come celebrate Bitcoin winter in Miami at Bitcoin 2023. The largest Bitcoin conference in the world returns to Miami from May 18th to the 20th. Head on over to b.tc/conference to get your tickets today. Use promo code BMLIVE to get 10% off of your tickets before prices go up. If you're like me and want to gain a deeper understanding of what's going on within the Bitcoin market and broader macro environment, you need to subscribe to Bitcoin Magazine Pro today. There's both a free and paid version of this daily newsletter where our market analysts break down what's going on in the markets so you don't have to. Subscribe today at BitcoinMagazinePro.com.
All right, let's bring up chart numero uno. That is Bitcoin, of course. And we've been looking at this pattern for a long time on the show. We've had back and forth about being, I'm kind of a perma bull for the last 6 months, and you were kind of being tempered in your bullishness. And the audience was telling you that you are not bullish enough. But anyway, at the very top of this most recent drop, that was the day that our last show was on, November 2nd. So since that time, when we were all talking about, oh, look, it broke out, we're going higher. We did back then, though, if you go back to the November 2nd show, we did say with a caveat that volume had not come in. And so we couldn't say this was a true breakout because volume has not confirmed it. And of course, then the FTX thing blew up. But as you can see, it is just a little bit lower than it was in June. And I want to make sure I hammer that down too, because a lot of people are very bearish saying this is going to be a long, long winter for Bitcoin. But really, Bitcoin has held up extremely well. And the last thing I'll say about this chart is this, that horizontal bar was support, now turned resistance. And then I put a little green line at 19,000 because that's where a lot of the volume by price resistance is. So if we can break back above 19,000 in the next couple few weeks, that will, I think, be a real big symbol that this really acute crisis or panic is over in the market. All right, I'll hand it back to you, CK. Do you have any comments?
I could see this crisis and panic continuing to persist. So I've been pleasantly surprised with Bitcoin's overall strength, given the severity of the FTX and the contagion around that. But I would be shocked if we break up. I do know that there's a lot of Bitcoin IOUs, and people are starting to really discover how scarce Bitcoin actually is. I think that's an element of the market that people, you know, maybe haven't fully appreciated to this point, but I just see a lot more pain and a lot of distrust. And there's also this dynamic where speculators, traders, they're fleeing to stable coins still. And, you know, maybe it's not until we see a USDC or a Tether having some serious issues that, you know, people will start to actually treat Bitcoin and sats as the true safe and risk-free asset, as long as you hold it in your own cold storage. One of the elements about these stable coins is that they're still connected in some way to outside investments in a centralized firm. So even self-custody of Tether USDC is not real self-custody. It's only Bitcoin that offers you the potential to truly self-custody. So I think when that dynamic flips, then obviously that's very bullish for Bitcoin price. And who knows, you know, what the price will be when that happens and where it'll go. But yeah, I don't know. I still remain, you know, optimistic, but very tempered optimism in terms of Bitcoin price.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I also remain bearish under this resistance here. That's what I was pointing out, is until we can get up and over that resistance, you have to be at least lean bearish on the price. But I don't know, man, as we'll get into next here with the dollar, I think we have a lot of positive things going on in macro, and that can, I mean, just look at stocks. I mean, stocks are going higher. Bitcoin would have been much higher if, you know, after this CPI print and following stocks higher, if it weren't for this FTX thing. So that tells me that fundamentals, Bitcoin is extremely oversold here and really should be correlated with the things it has been correlated with over the last year or two. So should we go on to the next charts then? All right. So up next is the dollar. And as you can see, I just have this kind of somewhat naked chart here showing the dollar coming down, testing some previous levels. A lot of people, well, when we were had our last Fed watch, was right at that peak right before the big drop. If you can see that, it was about 112 on November 2nd, and it has come down dramatically since then. Back then in early November, everyone was still on the strong dollar bandwagon, and now people are starting to freak out about the dollar's drop. If you go to the next slide there, Chris. So what I did here was I just zoomed back to 2015, and I'm showing a similar rise in the dollar, and it hit 100 on the DXY, and then it entered this range. It was range bound for many years until COVID, pretty much. Very similar to what we see now. Also not shown on this chart was, this is the Fibonacci extension. So if you measure from the range that it was stuck in prior to 2015 to the top of the 2015 spike there, it goes to the 1618 Fibonacci extension. And then if you go to the next slide, Chris, what I did here was I just took in that pink line, is just taking those same bars and putting them, matching up the tops and showing what a consolidation like 2015 would look like. So far, we're kind of similar. I did put in a shaded box as well to just kind of show maybe a proposed new range for the dollar. But also very surprisingly, if you take another Fibonacci extension for this recent increase, it went up to the 1.618 Fibonacci extension as well at the top. So very, very interesting with the dollar. Do you want to stop here, CK, and make some comments?
Can you just explain what a Fibonacci extension is for those of us who are not as well-versed in TA?
Yeah, so Fibonacci is the series of numbers that, you know, it has, and the 618 is the golden ratio. So you can say out of a move, so you have a move that goes 100%. Well, if the price reverses and goes back higher, it'll go to an extension. And the extension of the golden ratio, I know this sounds woo-woo and all that stuff, but this is found in nature all over the place. And the 618 extension is 161% of that whole move. I hope that makes sense. And so that's where this has been extended up to, both in 2015 and now again in 2022. And this goes in my theory of that the dollar is not going to crash. It's not like, if you go back 2 or 3 weeks, everyone's saying the dollar, why would the dollar rally end? And I was saying, no, it's time for consolidation. And now it's consolidating and everyone's saying, oh, the dollar is going to crash now. The dollar is going back down. It's the end of the dollar again. And of course not. It's just entering a range bound, just like back in 2015. Does that answer the question?
No, it does. And personally, I don't think the Fibonacci or the golden ratio is woo-woo. It's just math. Like, that's how the universe works. It's all fractals. You know, it's just, this is nature in numbers and us trying to understand it better. And I think human beings and markets, which are driven by human being, are naturally constrained by kind of the laws of the universe, as mysterious as they may be. So I definitely don't think any of it is woo-woo by any means.
Yeah, and psychology of crowds is very, you know, not very well understood at all. And so I think markets, maybe traders know psychology of crowds better than even like the psychologists and stuff. But anyway, let's continue on with some currencies. So the next one is the Hong Kong dollar. And I've talked about this as being a proxy for dollar stress in East Asia. And as you can see, as the dollar has come down, so has the stress from this Hong Kong dollar peg. It's down to its lowest level since March. And that just confirms that the kind of dollar shortage, acute dollar shortage, is kind of easing right now. Next one is going to be the Japanese yen. And you can see same similar story. It's coming down. It actually broke some structure from earlier this year, so it could continue to fall. And on this chart, it's actually strengthening. So the Japanese yen is now strengthening against the dollar. And this puts a wrench into a lot of the narrative about the importance of monetary policy, because Japan did not change their monetary policy. They didn't join the tightening of all the other central banks in the world. They actually continued with their profligate ways, if you will, and really had easy monetary policy. They had range curve, yield curve control. So they kept their 10-year yield in a tight window there. But despite that, yeah, they had a sell-off in the yen, but everything was going down against the dollar. And now it's strengthening again. So this kind of goes against some of that narrative that monetary policy is all important. And the next lot, yeah, go ahead.
Sorry, before you, like, just to kind of stay on that tip, can you kind of, I know you, for the people who've watched this show week in and week out, they kind of know your take is what your take is here, but can you just kind of give your hierarching position on these central banks and the reality of their position within the global currency markets?
Yeah, basically the central banks are not central. This follows very closely with Jeff Schneider's Eurodollar stuff. So this is a bank-centered system where commercial banks make loans. That's how money is printed. Central banks don't print money. They print casino tokens that they call reserves, but they're no good on the street. Okay. You can't buy a sandwich with a reserve held at the Fed. It is non-fungible casino token that it only works inside of the central bank system, inside the Federal Reserve system. So they don't print money. They stop panic and they kind of mold the psychology of the market with their forward guidance and with what they talk about the economy and what they talk about their monetary policy. That is what actually kind of forms their monetary policy. They're all about inflation expectations, not, they don't hammer home the mechanical workings of their monetary policy, because there are no mechanical workings in the monetary policy. It's all about inflation expectations. So when you look at Japan and what they have done versus the Fed and what they have done, it just doesn't fit a narrative that easy monetary policy is so much different than tight monetary policy, because really who's in control is the market. The market will move the Fed the way that the market wants to move it, not the other way around.
Yeah, no, I just think it's so important that we continue on this point. If there is anything that any of the listeners take from FedWatch, it is that point, which is that none of these central banks are central, and that all of their activity, they're not controlling what the rates are. They can only react to what the rates are doing, and their explicit policy may or may not affect what is actually happening.
Yeah, and they can affect it slightly by talking about it, right? They can say, oh, we're going to raise rates. And you can see this with Alan Greenspan and Ben Bernanke. Like, they would say, we're going to raise interest rates by 1%. And then you look at their actual balance sheet and their actual FOMC, or their open operations desk at the New York Fed, to see what kind of market operations they actually did. And they didn't do any, but the market moved 1% because they said they were going to move 1%. That's how powerful the mythology of the Federal Reserve is. Ben Bernanke, the first speech that he had after he was, you know, just a private citizen again, is that he said that monetary policy is 98% talk. That was his first thing that Ben Bernanke said when he was out of the Fed. 98% talk. So yeah, the central banks are not central. All right, let's go on to slide number 7, please, the euro.
Yeah, and I apologize. I know that we're dragging on and we have a lot more content to cover.
Yeah, I don't think we're going to get to it all today, but okay, so this one is the euro, and you can see it's just a pretty much an inversion of the DXY. It is breaking back up way above parity now to about 104 on the day. All right, so that's all my currencies. We can get into yields now. I have 3 more charts. Should we try to race through them?
Yeah, let's do it.
Okay, next one. This is the U.S. 10-year and 5-year, and I have been posting this multiple times throughout the last probably month. And this shows the gray boxes are the Fed funds target range. So the lower one is the previous range. And the where we are right now is the this gray box that the yields are falling through right now. You can see the 10-year is hitting about 3.72%. And the bottom of the Fed funds range is 3.75%. So the 10-year yield is below the Fed funds target range. This is incredible. The 5-year is also inside of this range. And I've been talking about this for so many weeks that if this is to occur and these yields fall through this range and go lower, the Fed will not keep raising rates because they are not in control. There will be left with a choice whether they're going to raise rates and lose that confidence in the Fed, lose the power of the mythology around the Fed by raising rates, and the rates don't give a crap and they keep going down, or they will follow with what the rates are doing. And so there's many other things in the market right now, like inversions, which I did not include today, but the 3-month 10-year is very heavily inverted, almost down to 50 basis points. So there's lots of signs out there that saying the Fed is done. All right, let's go to the next slide. This is just a similar chart showing that's the progression of the lower bound of the Fed funds policy. And as you can see, this is definitely a change. This is breaking down below the Fed funds policy range. And what's another interesting aspect of this chart is that this inversion, it has maintained itself the whole way up, or at least the last couple rate hikes, which is very unusual. I think it happened back in 1980s, early 80s with Volcker, but it has not occurred since then. Okay, and then the last slide.
Well, hey, real quick. It is really interesting to see that the rates are leading the hikes.
Yeah.
It's quite obvious to see that by the time they hike it up, the rates have already gotten there by themselves.
Yeah, and this is, I've talked about this as being space. So the rates are giving space to the Fed to raise rates, you know, so one goes up and then the Fed will raise in that space. Well, now they don't have any space left. All right, next chart. I wanted to take a blast from the past here again, kind of like I did with the dollar back to 2015. And this is 2018 and 19, still with Powell. He's brand new pretty much to the Fed at this time. But this was his first Powell pivot. So this red line, the step function, is the lower bound of the Fed funds target range. That red line I kind of have there is showing the upper bound when they pivoted. So they paused in January, right as the rates were collapsing into the Fed funds target range. That's when they paused. And then as the rates kept collapsing, that's when they pivoted. And you can see, just like you said, it's obvious that the Fed follows, because look on the right-hand side of this chart. The rates are going down, then the Fed follows it down, right? So the rates are going up, the Fed comes up. Rates going down, the Fed follows down. The Fed is not in charge here. And so if we think about today, maybe the Fed will try to raise some more, but I think that's a very big mistake. They're going to lose a lot of confidence. And I think they're pretty much done with their rate hikes. All right, so that's all my charts, dude. What else you got?
We got to go in about 10 minutes here, but should we get into talking about the digital dollar program with the New York Fed, MasterCard, etc.? You and I have been pretty loud CBDC skeptics, but it does look like in the U.S., the most inhospitable places to CBDC, there are some moves in that direction.
Absolutely. I was surprised by this, but this came out this week that the New York Federal Reserve. So if you guys aren't familiar, the Fed has 12 branches, right? And the New York Federal Reserve is the main one. And because that's where all the open market operations happen. But so the New York Fed is getting together with a bunch of banks and they're doing this pilot program. I have an article here from The Street and I'll just read a little bit of this. So the headline is Wells Fargo, MasterCard, and the Fed team up on the digital dollar. Several big name financial services companies have joined up with the New York Federal Reserve to announce a 12-week digital dollar program. Proposed platform will use distributed ledger technology, a decentralized peer-to-peer digital system, for recording transactions between parties in multiple places at the same time, according to a statement issued by the participating companies. The proof of concept project will test a version of the regulated liability network design that operates exclusively in U.S. dollars, where commercial banks issue simulated digital money or tokens, representing the deposits of their own customers, and settle through simulated central bank reserves on a shared multi-entity distributed ledger. So listen to all that word salad. I mean, you can't even follow. We're in this space. We're Bitcoin guru people. And it barely makes sense. It barely makes sense to us. So I don't see how this project is going to go. So I have a couple more paragraphs and then I'll throw it back to CK.
So pretty much they're creating a stable coin. They're creating like an official stable coin. They're like, hey, those other guys, they're stable coins. They're not official. These are official.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It's a central bank stable coin. And it's different. I guess we don't have time to read through this, so I'll just go on with what I was going to say here, which is, you know, Randall Quarles, he was the vice chair of the Fed up until the end of last year, and he's since stepped down. But he had this speech that we covered here on the show, and it laid out all of the arguments. He steel-manned the arguments for CBDC, and then he said why he was skeptical and why it was stupid and why it wasn't going to work. So I will link to that as well in the show notes to this episode. And you guys can go read Randall Quarles' words for himself or for yourself. But he pretty much is saying, well, let me read the very last bit, the conclusion at the end of his thing. Sorry, it's going to take me a second to scroll down. So his conclusion is, to conclude, I emphasize 3 points. First, the U.S. dollar payment system is very good, and it's getting better. Second, the potential benefits of a Federal Reserve CBDC are unclear. And third, developing a CBDC could, I believe, pose considerable risks. And he breaks down, this whole speech is breaking down all these points. So the Fed knows, Powell knows this is stupid. It's very well known, but there is this push for CBDCs from the globalists in the administration, people like Yellen at the Treasury. There's, of course, their other counterparts in the ECB and in Europe that are pushing for a CBDC. And so I think this pilot program is simply, okay, we'll let you guys try something. But you can tell by the word salad describing the system, it's hopefully they'll come out with some finding that this has a lot of work left. We don't know if this has any benefit. Imagine if they said that. So anyway, what do you got, CK?
Yeah, I mean, I thought I gave my opinion already. This is like an official stable coin. Personally, I think the existing stable coins are already Fed. You know, that's already Fed bucks. And yeah, I remain bearish on this idea of new money being and having direct accounts with central banks and that being some sort of disruptive force that will be adopted across, you know, across nations. I personally think it's the dollar and it's Bitcoin. Those are live. They're in digital form already. They're playing in this market. And the dollar has a lot of problems. So as time goes by, its ability to compete against Bitcoin will decrease. And then the U.S. payments networks that are so strong, they will remain as strong fintech payment networks that can use Bitcoin. So not saying that's the best payment network to leverage Bitcoin, but there's nothing stopping them from using Bitcoin, just like there's nothing stopping them from piloting their own official stablecoin rather than existing stablecoins.
Yeah, there will be Bitcoin banks. Hal Finney said it right at the beginning. So all this stuff can, Bitcoin can work in with the legacy system. It just is a better unit of account and form of money. Now, you said disruptive force. I think that's interesting because Quarles says this, a CBDC would be a disruptive innovation on commercial banks. It might put commercial banks out of business if everybody is having to bank with the Fed. And also, customers do benefit from competition between banks. So the bank A will offer certain services, and maybe you're not happy with that, and you go to bank B that offers a different suite of services for you. So there is competition in banks. And if you have a central bank that's doing it for everybody, then there is no competition, right? It takes that whole drive towards innovation out of the system. So while everyone's talking about, oh, this is for innovation, we need a CBDC to really help innovation, really, it's going to wither all of the innovation. It's going to take all the incentive to innovate out of the market. So yeah, that's all I would have to add for that. I don't think we have time for this G20 story. What do you think?
I think we could hit it in 5 minutes. Let's talk about G20. Let's talk about the WEF. Maybe the show comes full circle with some conspiracies about the globalists. But yeah, let's try to get it in 5 minutes here.
Okay. Well, again, I had prepared this article from The Guardian, and I was going to read through their 5 takeaways from the G20 meeting in Bali. I'll try to summarize this here. So the summit was dominated by geopolitics, to the irritation of its Indonesian hosts, who had wanted to focus on food and energy security and the climate crisis. Much of the opening day's business was drowned by an analysis of the Biden-Xi meeting 24 hours earlier. On Wednesday, the G20 quickly became an ad hoc meeting of the G7 as leaders huddled to discuss their response to the news that Russian-made missile had landed in Poland. The Bali joint statement issued on Wednesday did not go beyond non-committal platitudes on the climate emergency. G20 leaders simply said that they had resolved to, quote, pursue efforts to limit the rise in global temperatures to 1.5 degrees Celsius, end quote, including speeding up efforts to phase down the unabated use of coal.
While spinning up wood burning, wood pellet burning is not something that they mentioned here.
Okay, so I thought this was interesting. So Zelensky, he had a live video speech, I guess you would say. He appeared via video, and he kept using the term G19. And because he was trying to say, imply that they should kick Russia out of the G20. And this is not an idle threat because, you know, it was the G8, so they have the G7 now too, right? It used to be the G8 until 2014 when they kicked Russia out and it became the G7. So now Zelensky was trying to pressure them or imply that they should kick Russia out of the G20 and make it the G19. I mean, G19 doesn't roll off the tongue very easily, but I thought that was interesting. And let's see what else. I wasn't prepared to do this quickly.
Hey, putting you on the spot, man, but still good stuff.
Okay, so... okay, I'll read this part. The most highly anticipated bilateral came before the summit and even got before the summit even got underway. Biden's first meeting as president with Xi indicated that the reset in relations between the two superpowers, trailed by White House officials, had begun. Biden went some way towards soothing regional nerves by declaring that he had no reason to believe the Chinese invasion of Taiwan was imminent, but did not shy away from condemning Beijing's provocative military maneuvers around the island this summer. However, he placated Xi with assurances that Washington had not departed from its one China policy. I think it's funny. They had to have a one China policy because no one believes in the one China policy. So it's kind of interesting. And I mean, there's some other things. The WEF had a big speech there where they talked about their Ocean 2020 or Ocean 20 proposal to clean up the oceans and stuff like that. Of course, you saw all those images with Klaus Schwab walking with all the diplomats and all the leaders of the countries and stuff. So stand out to you about the G20 stuff, any headlines that you saw? And I think we're good to wrap it there.
Yeah, I mean, the globalist summit, the lack, just like the COPA event and other kind of, let's just call it globalist events, there seems to be a disconnect between the people there, what they're talking about and their actions. And I did think it was cute, you know, the club all, you know, in their traditional Indonesian garb at the event. It's nice to see that, you know, all these world leaders are playing nice and dressing up and taking photos. But here in the real world, trust is dying. It's breaking down. So, you know, it's kind of like the roaring 20s for globalist governments. They still have not entered into the real world quite yet. But, you know, I think the party is about to stop and coin is potentially that hammer that's going to break down the door.
Yeah, excellent commentary. I think I totally agree that trust is breaking down. These international institutions with which G20 is not really any sort of powerful institution, but institutions like the IMF, the UN, there have been stories about them circulating. I mean, the UN voted to charge Russia war reparations, and the war hasn't even like ended yet. You know, like what's going on here? And half the population of the world voted against that measure, but somehow it still passes the UN. The WTO and IMF, like I said, they all have problems. The WHO, that's lost all of its trust in the world, I think. So, yeah, all these international institutions are breaking down. And, yeah, Bitcoin is for enemies, like you say.
All right, Antal, where can people learn more about you? I know you're super active on the content game. I've been loving what you're doing on Spaces and on the podcast and on your Telegram. Where can people learn more about your content and your macro analysis?
BitcoinandMarkets.com. And at Ansel Linder on Twitter. I have a Telegram, t.me/Bitcoin and Markets.
All right, y'all. Just to close it out, the Bitcoin conference this upcoming May, Miami Beach, Florida. Get your tickets today. BM Live. Really excited to put on the best, the biggest, the most incredible high impact Bitcoin event. Once again, the Bitcoin conference. Go to b.tc/conference. Get your tickets today. And get your subscription to The Bitcoin Magazine. We recently dropped the Orange Party issue featuring an op-ed with President Nayib Bukele of El Salvador. And last but not least, Bitcoin Magazine Pro. For those who were speculators in the market, subscribers to Bitcoin Magazine Pro, our content, our cutting edge news, you know, indicated these insolvencies and these issues far before withdrawals were paused. And lots of people were talking about how Dylan LeClaire, our senior strategist and analyst, saved them from getting their funds stuck in insolvent exchanges. So that is the suite of Bitcoin Magazine products, the Bitcoin Conference, Bitcoin Magazine Pro, Bitcoin Magazine in print. Get yours all today. Use promo code BMLive for maximum savings. And with that, see you guys next week.
What is up, audio listeners? Thank you for enjoying another episode of FedWatch. Down in the show notes, you will find all the appropriate links to our social media, the original version of this podcast, and community links. Also, check out bitcoinandmarkets.com, where I put out a free weekly newsletter every Friday. And there you can also help support the show by signing up to become a paid member. See you next time.
Hey guys, this is Q from Bitcoin Magazine Live. Come celebrate Bitcoin Winter in Miami at Bitcoin 2023. The largest Bitcoin conference in the world returns to Miami from May 18th to the 20th. Head on over to b.tc/conference to get your tickets today. Use promo code BMLive to get 10% off of your tickets before prices go up. Bitcoin is for everyone, lefties, righties, and rejecters of the false dichotomy alike. And that is why the newest Bitcoin Magazine print edition is called the Orange Party Issue. It features articles by President Nayib Bukele, Jeff Deist, Beauty On, Natalie Smolensky, Eric Kaysen, Max Kaiser, and Jimmy Song. Get your copy at your local Barnes & Noble's bookstore or from the Bitcoin Magazine store at store.bitcoinmagazine.com and use promo code BMLIVE to get 10% off your annual subscription today. If you're like me and want to gain a deeper understanding of what's going on within the Bitcoin market and broader macro environment, you need to subscribe to Bitcoin Magazine Pro today. There's both a free and paid version of this daily newsletter where our market analysts break down what's going on in the markets so you don't have to. Subscribe today at BitcoinMagazinePro.com.